Great. Well, welcome, everyone. We're in our Storytelling and Organizations Story Lab call, and today we've got the privilege of having Sarah Armstrong with us, who's going to tell us a little bit about her work and then share a story and some other activity with us. But welcome, Sarah.
Thank you. Thank you, Tom. I'm just so excited to be talking with you folks. And Tom said, asked me to tell a little bit about my history with SIOSIG, which is a long time, and I don't even know anymore. But I was early on, I don't think the very first, but pretty early on after that. And just, I'm an educator, so the idea of bringing, you might be surprised how little there is of bringing story into education, but as an organization, the idea of bringing story and spreading story and how that can be beneficial in a number of ways has been very exciting. And of course, the people that I've met, you all know this, the people that you've met through the SIG are doing such interesting things and have ideas from different perspectives that then we can take and make our own. So that's what I love about the SIG and about continuing to be involved with it. And I'm so excited about sharing this new work that I've been involved with you all.
Great. Well, welcome. And someone else just joined us. Who was that?
It's Genevieve Waller from Chicago.
Oh, great. Hi, Genevieve.
Hi, Genevieve.
Hello.
So Sarah has just started. She was just sharing a little bit about her history, which goes almost back to the very beginning of our special interest group. Not the very beginning of time, but...
almost.
Yeah. Sarah can tell you it feels like it sometimes, doesn't it, Sarah?
Well, sometimes. But Molly, you were there too, so you know. How long has it been, do you think? It's at least 10 years. Is it 15?
Yeah, at least 10. I think it's been more like 12, maybe.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
I was trying to think as you were talking. Long time.
Yeah, and,
right,
it's,
and
it's also, and go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm sorry, I noticed that the SIG is going to be doing a pre-conference, which is very cool, and hopefully you'll talk about a little bit about that at the end, Tom, or did you want to do it now?
Why don't we save that till the end?
Okay.
But I also, you know, sometimes when I look at the other special interest group, I sometimes think, well, we're all kind of a subset of each other. And certainly every organization or every educational institution is an organization. So there's lots of overlap there. Do you want to speak a little bit more about your interest in organization and education to kind of set the frame for your story here, Sarah?
Surely. I'd love to do that. And Jenny and I were talking early on about an aspect that you'll find familiar in what I have to say. I've been in education. This is my 40th year. Yay!
Wow.
Classroom teacher for 17 years and a principal for 11 of those as well, a teaching principal. And then I've been working with professional development for some 30 or more years. There was obviously overlap. And early on, I was lucky to be involved in some really interesting projects that involved technology and education. And I was asked to help to teach some technology classes for teachers to clear their credentials. Often those folks were not real excited about taking those technology classes, which were required for them to clear their credentials. So I learned early on because it had been so powerful with my students, my kids, to share a story at the beginning of whatever session I was doing, which was for the purpose of bringing folks in, sort of disarming them, hopefully getting them out of their, I don't want to be here, oh, this might be interesting, and into, oh, this might be interesting, and going from there. And it really worked well. And then a colleague of mine at some point asked me to tell a story before a professional development session that her group was doing. And so I've done that from then on in all the workshop sessions, all the conference presentations. Anytime I'm asked to speak, I always tell a story. And hopefully it's one that gets people feeling more relaxed, shows them something about me, which is part of my purpose, to be able to connect in that way, and get us into the topic that we're going to be working with, which is often collaboration, communication, caring about each other, working together, those kinds of topics. So, and I should just say that the work I do is around project-based learning for the most part, and some subsets of that are asking good questions and getting good answers and information literacy, and I do some work with digital storytelling. So it's been really fun to be able to make those bridges and bring stories to folks who might not be expecting them and hopefully get them excited about doing that themselves.
Okay. And then you've said that you've been focusing at least partially on dilemma stories these days.
Right. Right.
Say a little bit about that.
I would love to. Maybe some of you were there at the conference session at the NSN conference last summer when Charles Temple did his workshop on dilemma stories. I went, oh, my goodness, this is so cool, because for a lot of reasons. And then I'm starting to think, well, you know, aren't all stories dilemma stories? And probably that's true in some level, but the kind of dilemma stories that I'm talking about and want to kind of focus you on today are the ones that either ask a question or that there's something that comes up in the story where there could be at least two sides to what's going on, and then helping people work with those. And Charles said that he got into this work by being invited to Eastern Europe, to help teach folks how to teach about democracy. And so the idea of getting involved in stories and then getting folks critically thinking about stories and sharing their own opinions and their own reasons for taking a side or taking a viewpoint really helps people start opening up to the idea of, oh, we all have different opinions, but that's okay. We can work together and we can learn from each other and so on. So I just think it's been so exciting. And then to play with these ideas and the ways that we can involve people in the looking at the stories has just gotten me very excited. So that's what I'm here to share about today.
Hi,
great.
This is Muriel Horowitz. I just came in. I'm sorry I was late.
Hi, Muriel. Welcome.
Hi.
Yeah. I echo that, too. Hi, Muriel. This is Tom, and
hi.
Sarah Armstrong is on the phone right now.
I'm so excited.
Yeah. And I think we're about ready for a story, Sarah, unless you have anything else you want to say before you share something.
Nope, I would love to do that. And probably, I would suspect that most of you, if not all of you, know this story, but I want to tell it, and then we'll take a look at it as a dilemma story and hopefully make the point. And then I have another little story to share later on, which I'm really excited about Jenny's work because I think that this might speak to her. So this is a story that takes place in a village in Africa near the Liberian rainforest, in which there was a warrior who was also well-respected in the village. And he went out hunting one day, leaving his wife and many children at home. And he was gone all that day and the next day. And his family started saying, well, where is he? Usually he's back, although, you know, when he's hunting, sometimes he's gone for several days. So he was gone another day. And they started talking with each other, and then another day, and there were a few fewer questions, and another day, and fewer questions. And finally, there was no more conversation about where the warrior had gone until his wife gave birth to their youngest son, and he was the baby, and he started walking and started moving around and finally started talking. And the first thing he said was, where is my father? And suddenly, his mother and all his brothers said, wow, where is he? Where is Ogallusa? He's been gone a really long time now. We should go out and see if we can find him. But how can we even start? So one of the boys said, well, I saw him leave. He went down that path over there across the river, so let's start out there. So all the boys went, except the baby, all the boys went on that path, and then they lost it in the forest, and then another boy found the rest of the next part of the path, and they kept going on that, and then that they lost that path, and another boy found another path, and so they followed that one. And they came to a clearing, and there in the clearing were bones spread out and the rusted implements of Ogallusa's hunting. His spear and his knife were there on the ground, and they knew that this must be the bones of their father. So one of the boys said, ah, I can bring these bones and reform them in the skeleton of the being that it once was. And he did so, and there was an adult male lying on the ground before them. Then one of the other sons said, oh, well, I can put sinew and muscle and skin on this skeleton, and he will be as he once was. And that came to pass. Then one of the boys said, well, I can put organs in the body, and I can make blood flow as it once did, which he did. And another boy said, well, I can put breath into this man, and his chest started to rise and fall. And another of the boys said, well, I can breathe the breath of life into him, so he's fully recovered. And he did. And one of the boys said, I can add movement, so he can move. And Ogallala sat up. And then one of the sons said, and I can give him speech. And so Ogallala said, let's go home. So he led all the boys back to the village, and he was welcomed into the village by his wife, who took him into their tent and had him bathe, fed him for 4 days, and then took him outside where he shaved his head, which is what you did when someone came back from the dead. Soon, Ogallala prepared a feast, and part of the feast was slaying one of the cattle that was in their fields, and from the tail, Ogallala made a beautiful cowtail switch, which had in it cowrie shells and bits of metal and shiny objects and beads, and it was beautiful. And he carried that cowtail switch with him everywhere. Well, soon the village put on a large feast and celebration to welcome this warrior home. And there was dancing, and there was singing, and there was music, and everybody dressed in their finest clothes, and they came around, and everybody admired the cowtail switch. And they followed Ogallala around, and some of them said, well, I'd like that cowtail switch. And he said no and held on to it, and even the women and children started asking after it. And finally he said, I have been given a huge gift. I have been brought back to life, and I will give my cowtail switch to the son who has done the most to make that possible. So there was argument among the boys. Well, I put it together, put his bones together. Without that, he wouldn't have been able to even exist. Well, I put blood in his body, and I gave him the breath of life, and I gave him speech, and I gave him movement. I should be the one. And Ogallala said, stop, and said, I'm going to give this switch to the one who did the most to bring me back to life. And he bent low and gave it to the baby. So that's the whole story, which is called the Cowtail Switch, collected or first recorded, as far as I know, by Harold Courlander. And it's in a book that he and George Herzog did from 1947. And it's told in many ways, and sometimes there are fewer sons, and sometimes there are as many or more as the ones that I shared with you. And so the question we often would do when we're considering this a dilemma story is, before giving the answer, to ask the folks who are listening to the story to say who should get the cowtail switch. And we can even do that by making corners of the room or however many places that you have to say, those who think that it was the baby, go over here. Those who think it was the son who breathed the breath of life, go over here. Those who think it was the one who gave him speech, go over here, and so on, and have people divide up. And then they share with each other in their corners the reasons that they have for why they think that child is the one who should be given the cowtail switch, and then we can come back together and share our reasons, and sometimes people change their minds and so on, but there's a big discussion that goes on. Now, I was really interested in this story, too. Charles said that if you tell this story in Africa, they will always say that it was the oldest son who gets the cowtail switch, because the oldest son always inherits from the father. So I thought that was really interesting. But for us, at least in our Western culture, I think it's an interesting challenge to give. The other part of it, too, is if somebody says, well, I know it's this person, to ask them to take another perspective, another person's viewpoint, and share that perspective, just to give them an idea to think critically about a different way to look at things. So that's the cowtail switch. Another aspect of dilemma story, or another kind of dilemma stories, are the ones where we can see, Charles called them binary, where there's a yes-no question posed. And again, we can get groups who would support either side state their reasons and then get into a debate about it and try to convince each other. So even something like Jack and the Beanstalk, we can have a question like, Jack was justified in taking the golden goose from the giant? Yes or no? Yes, what are the reasons that you would say yes? No, what are the reasons that you would say no? And then again, either switch sides or have the debate go on or see if people can come from different perspectives, recognize different perspectives and respect different perspectives, and then even perhaps change their mind because the reasoning that someone else gave is deeper than their own. Mm-hmm. And I love these stories too, and the approaching them in these ways to work with kids, because I hate to dilute or lessen the story in any way by saying, well, now who is the main character and what was the thing that happened, you know. So taking away from their experience in that way or diverting their experience, I'd rather have them talk about their ideas that came out from the story and be able to share those thoughts and deepen their own understanding of the story and take it steps further than just listening to the story. And so obviously you can do this with very young children by telling the story and then having them just talk. With older children, you can have them be writing down their reasons and then sharing their reasons verbally or you know, sharing their papers or whatever. And in terms of other organizations, I think it's interesting to do a story like this, and or there are many, and learn from your colleagues their different viewpoints. Now, the Cowtail Switch, many people that I know would say the baby, because when you remember somebody, then they're never dead. And he was the one who reminded everyone. So that might be not one that would be so obvious or so one that you might want to use with folks, because there might not be so much disagreement or different thinking about it. But here's one for Jenny. I came upon this one online, and I can give you the resource if you like. It's called The Doctor's Dilemma. And here's the idea. You have to pretend for a moment that a young doctor who works in a hospital finds out that he has the power to cure anybody of anything, only just by touching them. Any part of his body can be touched, and the person would be healed. And forever, as long as the doctor lives. So he's a young man, so he has some time ahead of him, but it's not going to be forever. So questions can come up, for example, what will happen if he uses his gift? How would he use it? What should he try to do? And what's the most favorable thing can be expected? And I would also add, what might be the unexpected consequences? So this is one that I think can get very deep into different viewpoints on particularly how the gift should be used and what people should be concerned about with such a gift. Because there's always going to be a positive and negative, I think, in any kind of situation. So those are just a few of the kinds of ideas of using stories or bringing stories to folks and then asking them to think about them in a different way or go to a different level with it, so that there's a deepening of their understanding of the story and they're sharing themselves with other people. And that's what I love about stories, that they're heart connections, and that they, we share the humanity of the experiences of ourselves and the people in the stories and how those all fit together. And it's another way to kind of expand that in, I think, a really non-threatening and interesting and powerful way. So I'm going to stop talking for a minute and see where you all are.
Well, what questions does the group have for Sarah?
This is Tricia, and Sarah, I know you talked about your background. I'm wondering, could you give us some examples of where you have used that story, and maybe even our group, like where we might use that story? I'm always trying to think where a story could be used, what kind of setting.
The Cowtail Switch or the doctor story?
The Cowtail Switch, yeah.
Oh, I would use that anywhere. I proposed doing a story for the National Council of the Social Studies on dilemma stories, and I would absolutely use that one. because it's social studies and because I think, again, we can get all kinds of different opinions. And I would not give away, quote, and unquote, the answer. I would set it up, as I believe Charles did with us last summer, to have people pick different sons and get their reasons for those sons, and then we have this lovely exchange of ideas. So I would do that just about any session where I would bring a story in that made sense to really delve into the story.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Other questions?
Sarah, this is Jenny. I just wanted to thank you for both stories and also for the second one that certainly does speak to me. It almost has kind of a Bruce Almighty kind of theme going on.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that those are very valuable. Sometimes we think, wouldn't it be wonderful if we just had, if we were able to fix everything, and yet, as you pointed out, there are consequences to doing that.
Right. And then one of the, some of the discussion about that story was, well, is there a way that he could reach everybody in the world during his lifetime? And, well, if we made a machine where people could go past on conveyor belts and just touch his finger and how, you know, and then does making a mechanism like that detract from the good work that he's doing because of the energy that, you know, so all kinds of conversations can come up about how it would occur and then what would happen after he passes and there's been no research about diseases because there haven't been any. So those kinds of issues I think are really interesting to look into as well.
And Sarah, how or do you kind of go the next step? So if, say, a staff brings you in because they're having trouble communicating and it seems like nobody values anybody else's opinion, so you want to tell a dilemma story to bring forth the different opinions and to have people listen in a non-threatening way, then do you go that step deeper to say, now, what techniques did we use just now, and how can we bring this into the workplace on a day-to-day basis?
Like absolutely. And Molly can speak to that more, too, I think. Another kind of thing then with a group like that might be to, you know, take a look, well, you do some work ahead of time about what are the issues that people are facing, perhaps, and if there's any story that would maybe more speak to that, that people could come into in a safe setting and so on, or maybe that's the next step. And then having folks think about a future story, writing their own story, as if these issues were all solved and time had passed and things were going well. So which is kind of back loading how you would get there, or you're starting the idea of how would you get there, but having that kind of story as a culminating thing. But this kind of the dilemma story is getting into different ideas and how people think about things differently is going to be a step forward to be able to, I think, for people to be able to collaborate and communicate better with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And just telling, and hopefully then telling their own stories. I had such a powerful experience with a digital storytelling workshop where a group of folks who, this is educators, but they didn't interact with each other. They were from high schools and middle schools, or I forget exactly what it was, but for the digital storytelling workshop, they created a short script, which were personal stories, and then read their stories as part of a story circle so they could get feedback if they wanted it, again, in a safe place. And afterwards, the coordinator said to me, oh, you did so much more than I expected. You did the digital storytelling work, but you also got people talking to each other, and people got to a deeper level of understanding of who the other person was, which would make them more tolerant and more empathetic and so on. So those are the kinds of outcomes we'd love to have when people share stories or share story work or get deeply into stories and then sharing their own as well.
Yeah. Say a little bit about what digital storytelling is and how you're involved in it.
Oh, okay. Digital storytelling, in my view, my favorite model is the one with the Center for Digital Storytelling here in Berkeley that Joe Lambert and Dana Ashley began years ago. And the idea is you start with, their idea is you start with a personal story and a story that needs to be told that most people wouldn't know about because it's a personal or a family story. And you use your own voice. That's very important. Traditionally, you have a script, you record it, and then you put together images, photographs or other icons, music if you like, video if you like, and all of those elements make something more than any one of them alone would do. So it's not just using the technology because you can, but why would this add something to it? One of the things it does is allow more people to probably see and hear the story than would be possible if you were just telling it in groups, but however you lose them, the personal connection, the heart-to-heart connection of seeing somebody's face and response to your story. So there are always trade-offs. But the digital story, I think, is a really powerful way for kids to share their knowledge, and that's how I've been promoting it. So you do work on Martin Luther King, and to show your understanding of the Civil Rights era, you do a digital story using images, using perhaps part of his speeches, whatever it is, to really show your understanding in a way that combines the images with your voice, with the text or the content that you have to share. And I want to tell you guys, there's a brand new, there are lots of apps out there, some are okay, some not so okay, but there's a new one coming out from Adobe, I think next month, called Ginger, that's free, and I really like it. And part of their thing behind it was trying to get to the democratization of storytelling, so helping nonprofits and all kinds of folks tell stories, putting together images, their voice, and music if they want, and so on. And they have some frames for folks with different purposes in mind, where they've got some questions already there for people to get started and so on. So I didn't want to get off on this, but it's very cool and it's free. So look for that, Ginger from Adobe.
Wow.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Sarah, you saying Ginger, G-I-N-G-E-R?
Correct.
Okay.
Great. Other questions or comments?
I'd like to hear from folks about how they might use that, any dilemma story, Talk to Us With, or anything else, what it made them think of, if people are willing to share.
This is Tricia, and I wanted to say, not in response to that so much, but that listening to your story, Sarah, just it continues to deepen my understanding of how the telling of the story is one thing, but it's really all about the listeners and how they use it and how they get it and how they relate to each other. So in addition to enjoying your story, it just drove that point home to me quite a bit.
Great, thank you.
About the receiving. So I don't have an example of where to use it, but I just want to say that.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So could we restate the question? It was to have people comment on what they felt about the Telltale Switch?
I'm interested. You guys can share whatever you'd like. I'd love to hear it. But I'm really interested in, did the idea of a dilemma story, was that something new, and could you see how you could use it in your own work?
Well, who would like to share about that? I'm sure several people would.
Hi, this is Jane. I just wanted to say thanks, Sarah. I liked your telling, and I really appreciate all that you've shared so far. I wrote down about Ginger. I want to find out about that. I have known about Dilemma Tales before, but you've given a new light to them, and I really appreciate that.
Good.
Not exactly sure how I'm going to share it now, but I did want to unmute long enough to say thanks. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you, Jane. And anybody, Tom, I think you sent my email out to folks.
Yes.
Or you're happy, I'm happy to do that. Write to me if you'd like to know more about Ginger, because they've sent me a letter that I can send to folks so you can get it and try it even in beta if you want. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's an offer.
Thank you.
Sarah, this is Molly.
Yeah.
I'm really proud of that work. I saw that same workshop, and I was thinking, wow, what a wonderful thing to do critical thinking, teach critical thinking to kids using stories. And so I'm so proud you're doing that work. Did you modify that fellow's process, or are you using pretty much what he did?
Well, he's got several different ways to pose the stories. The one of the four corners and things I've used before, the one about Jack and the Beanstalk, I thought, well, that's really cool. Just do a yes and no and so on. Mm-hmm. I've been in touch with Charlie, and he's been so sweet about, yes, they talk about it, whatever, because there's the NCSS, the National Council for the Social Studies Conference, is in Boston next November, and he's on the East Coast. And I said, you should propose a session. He said, no, but you can't, you know. And I said, if you're not going to, I'd love to. And he said, go for it. So I proposed a session for that. But, I've modified his some, but I learned so much from him, and I would love to spend a lot more time with him, because he's really done much, you know, been at it much longer than I have. He's got a bunch of ideas about, and you remember, Molly, about other ways to work with stories, having kids act them out, having actually formal debates, having people pose their own questions in different ways, looking at any of the stories in the as part of a hero cycle, you know, just lots of different ways to be able to go more deeply into it. I was focusing more on the ones that had to do with the thinking about the different perspectives and viewpoints, and getting reasons for those to be able to share those with each other. And presumably the people, you know, you would go to the corner that would fit with your values or with your interests, and so that reveals something about you, I think. That's fair to say, and that's fine. That's let's do it. I want to know more about you and what you think about and what you care about.
You know, Sarah, this is Muriel. I'm wondering about that story, if you've ever used it with preschoolers, because I think they would just love the response that it's the little kid that's the wisest in a way.
I've never done it with kids that young. It would be fascinating to see.
Yeah, I think I'm going to try it and see what happens when I tell to preschoolers. Because I love the story, and it's so important to get kids to talk about a story and really internalize it. And then when the hero becomes somebody they can relate to,
right,
I think that would be very cool.
Right. Well, I could see them acting that out for sure, acting the story out for sure. And then maybe there
right.
is a question at the end that you would ask without giving them what most people consider the answer. And I would love for you to write me and tell me how that went and what happened. I'd love it.
All right. I'm going to try it.
Thank you. All right.
Yeah.
Good idea, Muriel.
Along those lines, this is Tricia speaking, and I'm just curious, because I work with a lot of people in corporate settings, and I'm wondering, has anybody used that kind of a story? I can see its application, and I think it's great. And I guess a couple of things. Do people get resistance on it? It's probably all in how it's presented, but I'm just wondering, because I haven't done anything like that in you know, in a business setting. Does anyone have any thoughts? Or Sarah, do you have thoughts about, I know the story travels well, but how do you do that, you know, in a setting that's maybe a little bit more skeptical?
Yeah, well, yeah, and it would depend on the group, of course, but I would hope to assume that it's an engaging story and that presented as a story and as a dilemma or as a different, you know, to look at different perspectives, that people would participate, and that would be, and this one might be more interesting and easier to do than the ones about the, you know, the young woman who was on one side of the river and her lover was on the other side, and she had to take a boat across, and the ferryman said, well, I'll only do it if you sleep with me, and then the boyfriend rejects her and so on. I mean, I don't know. You know, I would think the cowtail. I'd rather go in the cowtail split than that one. You know. So,
I agree.
There are moral and ethical
dilemmas.
There are moral and ethical dilemmas. But I think Molly Kachok has a lot of experience doing this kind of work. So I would love to hear Molly's response to your question, Tricia.
I have this one. I was trying desperately to remember the fellow's name, so I'll have to pull it out. It's the bridge story, and it's long for me to tell now, but it's a dilemma story that was used by a psychologist, you know. And then just recently, and I've used that one, if I can dig it up, I will try to send it to you guys.
Perfect.
For your curiosity. But just recently I read a book called Moral Tribe, and I'm sitting here racking my brain to think of the author's name. I've loaned it. And in there, are you familiar with the trolley dilemma story or anything like that? I wasn't either. And this is, if you don't like psychology, if you're not an intuitive person who likes to read about theoretical stuff, you'd hate this book. But the guy was using it on a very dilemma stories on a very high level, and so it was an interesting read, and it gave me all sorts of ideas. But the bridge story is probably. And the one I told when I did the story lab, those were like dilemma stories. But the bridge story is really a good one. And if I can find it, I will. I might have to copy it and just send it to you guys. You know, like in a file. But because it's been a long time since I told it, I might have it typed up. But anyway, yeah, I've used them, and the processing of them. It depends on the group. You know, like I couldn't in industry, I couldn't take. Any folk tale or any fairy tale or anything like that, which is a shame because the folks in the industry just didn't like that kind of thing. You know, they'd run me out of there. So I had to find stories that were not, but I love those kind of stories, dilemma stories. But there's plenty of them. And this guy that wrote The Moral Tribe, I'm sorry I cannot cough up his name right now.
I think it's Joshua Green.
But now tell me again.
Joshua Green, is that it?
That doesn't sound right, but that might be it. It's Moral Tribe is the name of it. It's a fairly new book. Anyway, it's now processing it is a whole other thing, you know. And Raj Mehta, this fellow I worked with at Eastman Chemical Company, he and I were thinking about doing like a Socrates Cafe using dilemma stories. Mm. And so we've been searching for some.
Mm. Yes, I think whoever offered that name was right. Moral Tribes, Moral Tribes,
I don't have
Emotion, Reason, and the Gap Between Us, is that that's the guy?
Say the whole thing again. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear.
Moral Tribes, Emotion, Reason, and the Gap Between Us and Them by Joshua Green.
That's it. Yeah.
Great.
And it's not a, he's a pretty good writer, but it's really hard for psychology, but I loved it because it related to dilemma stories on a real deep level, you know, so it gave me a little bit more understanding of what I was messing with.
Yeah, super.
Well, Sarah, Tom here again, and I liked how you started with the preface of, in a way, every story is a dilemma story. You know, and I was just thinking about things that I tell, and I often just ask a question like, you know, what struck you about that? And then break people into small group and then have a large group sharing of a little bit of what they came away from in their small group. But I like your kind of mapping idea and the binary approach. And as Molly said, just bringing in the processing of it much more directly is a great way to do it. So I thank you for that. I think we're about at our 45 minutes, so we should move towards wrapping up the call, unless, Sarah, there's something else you want to add at this point.
No, just if you're interested in the topic, and I suspect you are, or maybe you already have done it, if you just search for Dilemma Tales online, you get a lot. And it's been fascinating to do that kind of research as well as putting process to the stories that I already tell. So that's always fun, too. And, again, I would love to hear from any of you about how you have thought more about dilemma tales or how you're using them. And I'd be happy to share the ginger information as well.
Great. And I really love how last month we had Mary Alice Arthur on our Story Lab call, and so much of her interest is about harvesting and how you process story and how the story speaks to different people and how you can give people different instructions to listen for as they're hearing the story. So that dovetails really nicely with what you shared today. So I thank you for that.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, she's fabulous. And one of the ideas that Charles shared last summer, too, was for a story that you think people haven't heard, to put up two or three key words in it and ask them to watch for those in the story, or listen for those in the story and see how where they fit and what they did. You know, so a focusing kind of idea as well before, too.
And what's Charles' last name again?
Temple. And he's at, let me get this, Charles Temple, he's at Hobart and William Smith Colleges in Geneva, New York.
Okay, thank you.
And his email, would you like his email?
Sure. We'll put that on.
Temple at hws.edu, so Hobart, William and Smith Colleges, hws.edu. And he's been so responsive, he's been great. And I think he's got a book coming out about this, and I keep saying, when is it available? I want to buy it. When is it available?
Great. We do, you had mentioned, Sarah, about that we're going to have a pre-conference SIO session, and we're working on shaping that, but it's looking good, and we're looking at how stories can help with knowledge management.
Mm.
And we're also looking at, with that, in kind of an overarching theme of engagement. And also we're looking into, you know, what's the business case for bringing storytelling into an organization, whether that's from the internal or external perspective. You know, how do you convince other people that we should really be doing story? And that's an ongoing discussion in these story labs, but we're finalizing who exactly is going to be speaking during the pre-conference session. But we're definitely having it and looking forward to it, and it's going to be a great, lively session.
Super, super.
Yeah.
Appreciate all your work on that. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Well, everyone, thank you for joining the call. We had a nice turnout today of 10 people or so. So thank you all for joining. And our executive committee was going to stay on the line and talk a little bit about that pre-conference. But everyone else, thank you very much, and have a great rest of your afternoon.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Sarah.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, did we lose everybody?
Not everybody.
Well, Tom, this is Tricia, but I don't know if I'm on the executive committee.
Yeah.
I don't know. Am I? If I'm not, I'm fine. I'll get off.
Yeah. No, Tricia, would you like to, officially you're not, but you're the closest thing to. And
okay,
you know, it'd be kind of nice to hear your input if you have 20 minutes or so right now.
I do. And, I do have at least 10 to 15 minutes, yeah.
Great. And are you
Tom,
there too?
I'm still here. Molly's still here.
Great. Thank you, Molly.
Mm-hmm.
And Pete's here. And I was kind of disappointed that Mark couldn't join us today. I didn't hear from him, but he missed the call, I think. And we haven't heard from Easter in a while. our other executive member. But we did want to go through a little bit on our conference, and I had sent out a little list, I don't know, a budget shot of what it might look like. And did you get that, Molly and Pete?
Yes, I did.
Tom, I don't know whether I did or not. Lord, help me. I don't remember anything that had to do with a budget, but not to say it.
I sent it like 15 minutes before the call.
Oh, no, I haven't been on the computer.
Okay.
In fact, I'll go try to get my computer while I'll mute and go get my computer.
Okay. It's not huge that you do that, but I'm just going to send it to Tricia right now, too, so that you could just take a look
great.
And we could talk a little bit about this. Getting that ready here.
Did you guys go somewhere?
No, I was quiet because I was trying to get my computer to do what I wanted it to do, and it's
Okay, I got it. I'm with you now.
Okay. And let's see here. Great. Oh, I did get an email from Mark. He said he's being called into a meeting, but he'll follow up with later on things. So here's kind of to talk about the pre-conference, Tricia and Molly and Pete, but Pete's a little bit more in the loop on this. We're kind of looking at three components, and the main component would be our visiting guest from Washington, D.C., who's been involved in the project that takes kind of a knowledge base of stories in the Forestry Service and keeps track of them and how they use that. And she would be kind of a main presenter. And we'll talk more about her in a moment. And then Mark, our vice chair, who's a banking executive and has experience as both a storyteller in that industry and an advocate for storytelling, is going to put together a kind of how do you make a business case for storytelling. And then I was thinking that I would help facilitate just some of the interactions that happen while we have our folks together to help pose some questions and let people share stories in small group or maybe dyad and just kind of keep the whole session unified and lively. That's not set in stone, but that's kind of the three elements that at least I have in my head right now that we're looking at. And a question that we need to address is like how long those different segments would be, or if Molly or Tricia, you or Pete, any of us have another idea of something else that we should consider besides those three elements. And then we also need to look at budgeting, and so that's the little draft budget that I envisioned up. Any comments about how like those three pieces sound to you?
I think it sounds good, Tom. The only cautionary thing, we used to get complaints. The thing that folks really enjoyed the most, it seemed back in the, you know, Ice Age when Sarah and I were doing, was they loved the networking, the opportunity to talk together. So the only thing I would encourage is that you leave ample amount of time either in between those or after it for these folks to share ideas and network. We used to get complaints about it constantly because we packed it too full and didn't have enough time for them to do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well,
Tom, this is Tricia. I think that's a great comment, Molly, and that's I think that's very true. We're looking at, would the time frame be like a 9 to 12? Can you give me the perimeters of the pre-conference thing?
It's 8 to 12. And
8 to 12, okay,
it's
good.
8 to 12, and we also have a little bit of time when we finish. Ideally, this is still kind of in flux, and we don't know exactly how much it's going to cost for like a box lunch, but it's probably going to be $10, and we can invite people to stay in the room and have lunch and continue to network and talk and eat. So it could be 5 hours that people spend together.
Yeah.
And I was also wanting to include like some coffee and rolls just as we begin to kind of set the tone of hospitality. So we could have a kind of soft beginning at 8 because I would imagine there'll be a significant number of people who don't make it, you know, at 7:45 to bring in their registration stuff.
I like the format that you have outlined, and I'm delighted to hear that it's 4 hours because I'd like to hear the woman from Washington. I'm very interested in what Mark has to say. This is exactly the kind of thing, because I'm a new member. I mean, I just re-upped, but this is my second year. This is really what I was looking for when I joined NSN, was really stories in businesses and what's the case and how do we do it and who's doing what and, you know, what works and where do you run into some blocks, you know, and how do you handle it. And just so all of that sounds great. Plus, your facilitated part where maybe like-minded people, you know, if you had said, if you're interested in X, go over to this table, Y, go over here. And then the idea of being able to mingle afterwards.
You know, that makes me, as you say that, maybe we might even put in a little open space portion, although that could be kind of quick, but I don't know if you guys are familiar with the open space technology of Owen Harrison.
Oh, yeah, I think that would be wonderful.
Yeah.
We did it 1 year, Tom. It was great.
Ah, yeah. So the way it works, Tricia, just to remind you if you kind of know, or Pete, I don't know if you know, but the idea is that people pick their own topics, and there's a little marketplace, and you say, if you have a discussion about something that you want to bring up, you just write up a little sign, and so it's like I'm looking at how to, somebody might say, I'm looking at, you know, how much should you charge and what are the financials, and sorry, I had to switch phones. And then people just can bring up their own topics and say, we're going to convene over here. And then you just open it up to whatever topics are out there in the group. It's something that's been used very widely worldwide in the last 15 years.
I've seen that, and I think that would be great if we had even a mini version of it, because that would allow people with very different interests to get some of them addressed, you know. So it's a combination of, yes, we have a presentation, but there's also some time to connect with your colleagues.
Yeah. Okay, well, great. Okay, so we'll definitely be shooting for that, to have ample time for networking and for people to share their own stories and quite possibly put in an open space segment. One of the questions to do that is, our guest's name is also Tricia, and how long she might present for / facilitate. Pete, what's your sense on that?
I don't have a good feeling for that, but I can get back in touch with her. And I think some of that is going to be our expectations as well. You know,
right.
What kind of time slot do we have? What kind of format? And then what we ask of her. A history of knowledge management in the U.S. Forest Service, how it got started, what the program looks like now, how it's used. We pose several questions like that. So her presentation would be somewhat structured along those lines.
Yeah. And I think one of the keys is to interject in there, you know, how can she keep us participating so that it just doesn't come up to be, you know, an hour lecture on the U.S. Forestry Service's storytelling project. But, you know, she might go for 20 minutes and then pose a question or something, and then we come back and then she shares something more, or she opens it up to some questions, or
okay.
I would just like to try to keep it dynamic rather than the lecture format. And
This is Tricia speaking again, and I love that idea. First of all, I love the fact that it sounds like Pete or you, Tom, or someone will be working with the speaker, because I think the speaker sounds like she has an enormous amount of information. And I do think it's up to the committee to say, here's what our group really wants, you know, so if you could tailor it this way. And then to your point about being participative, you know, just the kind of thing, you know, like be thinking of your own organizations, or how would this work in your organizations, or, you know, just share a thought. I think that's great. After 20 minutes, that's, you know, we all need a little bit of energy, you know, you know, to come in there. So to make it really about us, it's all about us. And I'm going to apologize now. I do need to get off the line, and I don't think it's appropriate I stay for the financial part, since I've crashed the executive committee meeting, so I'm going to recuse myself.
Okay.
But thank you for letting me stay. And I just really wanted to. I'm very interested in the pre-conference I've been talking about. So I will say goodbye and thank you to all. And I look forward to the next step. And Tom, you're doing a fabulous job with all these emails and everything. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you, Tricia. Thanks.
Okay. Bye, everybody. Bye now.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
And one other little thing here. I guess I should stop our recording. So if you've been listening for this whole time, let me just stop that now.